Thank you for listening to this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan. If you'd like to listen to bonus episodes, go sign up to the Patreon. That's patreon.com. Anyway, you'll find a way. Hello and welcome to this episode of the James Donald Forbes McCann Catamaran Plan podcast. Would you gentlemen like to introduce yourselves to the listeners?
Hello.
Hello.
This is
I am Patrick Tabari, fellow comedian.
And I'm Dylan Solomon, fellow comedian.
Patrick and Dylan, we're out and about in the town. It's late at night on a Sunday.
That's right.
And I'm finding it hard to find time to do the podcast during the week because of the young family. And these gentlemen were off to do a podcast, and I said, can I come and do my podcast? And so we're doing, I'm recording on my phone. Usually I'm sure it looks a lot better. And that podcast, Patrick, is called?
Smudge Hawks.
Smudge Hawks.
One word.
One word.
Capital S, capital H.
Love it.
Yes.
And Dylan, you had a set tonight. You had a great set. I'm trying to talk you into recording that and releasing it.
Yes, I had a really fun set. And then I brought you up. And I, you know what? And you had a great set. And then I was a little worried about how I introduced you.
I couldn't say that I remembered, but I'd love to hear about it.
Okay. I said,
I don't remember a thing that happened.
This next guy's great. This next guy great and then so funny. Give it up for James McCann.
What a fine introduction. No problems with that introduction at all.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were a man of like, you wanted like 5 credits.
No, I like close personal friend. I like having no credits whatsoever.
Me too.
And I try and give people as few credits as I can get away with. Sometimes opening up for somebody, they'll say, give this guy some credits. I think that America, you need that. You know, credentialism is very important to your people.
But that feels so anti-comedy, doesn't it? You want like a stranger guy that's like, oh, this is my friend, this is my piece of shit.
Buddy. I don't know, like a prove yourself situation.
Well, a baseline. You know? It's a baseline of like, and especially if you did well or had a good set, then it's like, oh, you're gonna love my buddy.
People always say that you got to talk people down.
Yes.
Don't build them up too much.
Right.
But I like to build them up a lot.
Do you like to be built up?
Set after me? No. I know that it works. So I want other people to fail so that I may succeed. I'm trying to be a nicer person.
Right.
I'm getting in trouble at the moment because people don't think I'm a nice. Let's start again. All right. Hello and welcome to this episode. I'm going to have to bleep. I do this thing. I'll start here. I do this thing on the podcast where there's no swearing. Now, I can bleep you out, but I only do that to get a broader listenership so that I can have money for a boat.
Right.
Yes.
And it's exhausting. I swear all the time. Then I have to bleep myself out. But I'm trying to get the biggest possible listenership to get the most money possible to buy a boat as quick as I can.
Yes.
The ultimate American dream.
Yes.
We've tried this. Patrick has a hard time not cussing.
It's impossible. But for you, I will do it.
You know, I can edit it out. It's fine.
I'll try my hardest.
I really appreciate that because it's a bother. I try and be creative with how I edit things out. Yeah. Little noises.
Have you ever thought of a boat maybe without a row?
A boat without a row?
Yeah. Drop a couple bombs and, you know.
This reference is...
it's over mine.
What's a row?
A row, like rowing a boat. I thought that's what you just wanted, a rowboat.
Oh, no, I want a big...
You want a boat.
$500,000 catamaran.
Wow.
Yacht.
Yacht. Yes. Well, a yacht has one hull. Gee, the cat. Cats very... I did not have a cat allergy before I came in here.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. That's pretty catty.
I asked you several times and you kept saying,
do you have an allergy to cats? And I kept saying no. And you do.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
I feel okay. I'm holding.
I feel like I've got hand, foot, and mouth disease. I feel prickly all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like thrush.
It really is.
Up on the back of your throat.
What are we doing? I fell in love with a cat only once in my life, I think. When I first moved to Austin, I was staying at some people's house and they had two wonderful cats.
Uh-huh.
And I felt so sad for not hanging out with the cats. My wife is very allergic. So we'd have to spend so much money to get a non-allergenic cat.
Mm.
Do you want to introduce yourselves? Now's a good place to actually start the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, I'm Dylan Solomon.
Star sign?
I'm an Aries.
Oh, yeah. It's God of War.
God of War.
The Ram. And Pat, who are you?
Patrick Tapari. I am a Leo.
A lion.
A lion.
Heart of a lion.
In August, summer
jaws
birthday.
Of a lion. Mane of a lion. I don't know anything about Leo. I'm a Pisces.
You're Pisces.
Two fish. Mm. One fish? Blue fish. Hey. This is a podcast about me trying to buy a boat. It's late at night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We finished doing gigs. Did you get up at the sunset?
I did not get up tonight.
You just went to hang out?
Just went to hang out.
Show and face.
Yes.
I've heard them call that.
Yeah.
Patrick's a socialite.
I'm a socialite.
Boy, I find that to be the hardest thing in a comedy scene.
It's the worst.
Yeah, I'm not good at it because I don't like people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Well, especially at open mic things, everybody sucks, and everyone's there because they think they're good, but just objectively, everybody sucks.
Yeah,
and so everyone's been snippy and jostling for position and going out of their way to say that people were good when they weren't, and people were bad behind their back. I don't do well in that milieu.
The people who didn't watch your set tell you great set.
It was heartbreaking when I was once walking in a different entrance to the mothership and some of the door guy stopped me and he said, "Hey, man, great set." But I haven't done it yet. Oh, no, this must be happening all the time.
Right. I think I know who that was.
Right.
Who was that?
I can't say.
Let's keep it all positive. And you did have a set. It was a fine set.
Yeah, fine set.
And you have a podcast. I watched some of it. I was thinking about my own set.
Yeah.
I was standing out back. Eating.
What were you eating?
Some of Marnie's P.F. Chang's. And I got a... She wasn't super happy to let me have her P.F. Chang's, but I did. And I got a fortune. I'd like to discuss here on the James Dolphins McCann Catamaran plan. Yes. We're recording at night because it's easier than doing it with a week with the family.
Please tell us.
Your willing heart will help you achieve the impossible.
Wow.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having me here in this home. To do the podcast. So great to be in the home. I need to do a podcast and I couldn't do it during the week. And I think what I'd like to discuss is our willing hearts and how that will help us to achieve the impossible.
Buying a boat.
Well, yes. But also so many other things that the heart wills.
Yes. Mm.
And I thought, I've got my boat buying thing. What do your hearts will? You said earlier that you wanted to be a god.
Yes, I did. And I think it's possible if I really flush this hour out, this first special.
You want to be good at comedy and have a lot of money.
Yeah, that would be nice too.
Love it. Let's be honest about what we want. You just want the special. You want 1 hour special.
I want one hour. I want the first hour to be great. I want a great hour.
And it will be.
What do you want?
I also want to be a touring comedian, successful, but I would love to buy a home in the mountains.
What? Are you also a Denverian?
No, Massachusetts.
Oh, that's right. Boston. We spoke about that.
New Hampshire.
Not heaps of mountains near there.
Well, New Hampshire and Maine.
New Hampshire, yes.
Those are the mountains. I would visit there. That was my one vacationing place where the family would go.
You know, mountains are very scary in Australia because they're covered in foliage and they catch on fire every year. So we're all a little nervous about that, but I want to live in the hills personally, the Adelaide Hills. It's one of my dreams.
And do the hills have foliage?
Oh, hills have so much foliage. They're always going up in flames and people go, you'd be mad to live up in the Adelaide Hills. It's nonsense. Unless you live in Mount... When the fires go up, as they do, people take shelter in the cinema at... which we call you call them the movie house.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Movie house.
The talkie chamber.
Yeah.
And what you do is you flee into this big movie in the biggest hills town, movie theater, and people bring their animals. You know, their favorite couple of animals that they didn't want to have die in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have concrete movie theaters or movie houses?
Movie, picture
houses.
Cinema.
Cinema.
Do you not say cinema here?
Yeah, we do when it's the Oscar season's around. Yeah.
Oh, yes. When it's all those.
Right. An evening at the cinema.
I would like to win an Oscar.
Okay.
Let's all look at what the heart desires. I'd like rich people in suits to tell me I've done a good job. And I'd like to have that opportunity to thank some people.
Mm.
Wouldn't it be nice? Doesn't it feel more meaningful to thank them that way?
A mission of the heart.
Mm-hmm. Who's the first person you'd thank?
My agent?
Yes.
Yeah. Ethan! You're doing a great job!
Ethan Hawke.
Well, no, we were discussing Ethan Hawke before. Much to say about Ethan Hawke. I brought a weird energy. I'm sorry.
No, you haven't.
I'll bring it to a fault. The willing heart will help you achieve the impossible. You know, we can think historically of many people whose willing hearts have helped Hitler.
Yes.
And no one thought they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the man in the prison in South Africa?
Some with an M.
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela.
No one said that you could destroy the economy of that country.
Yeah.
And they found a way with his willing heart of rolling blackouts and all sorts of unpleasantness there, as well as some good things.
Yeah.
So, who is your favorite person who's used a willing heart to achieve the impossible? Pat?
My first thought was Robin Williams, but I don't know why. I don't really.
Yes. Laughter is, in some cases, impossible. Also suicide.
Yeah. Jeffrey Epstein might be someone.
Who would have thought that was possible? Only a true... Do you think he did it because he just loved the game or they had something on him? And
I mean, truly, what inspires that type of act, that type of lifestyle, you know?
Financiering?
Financiering, blackmailing.
He was pretty blackmailing.
Pretty much taking over the world.
Yeah, I think some influential people must have helped him. But good people, too. Good people.
Yes.
Dylan, good people. With
Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
Yes. Come
thrown
back.
Thrown out of sport. Loved pussy in. Too much.
Car crash.
Car crash. Car crash. Marriage. Car crash. Actual.
And came then he's back.
And he's won great tournament.
Exactly.
Congratulations, Tiger. I'm thinking.
I used to learn about Tiger Woods when I was growing up. We had a class called Assets where we would learn how to be a good person. And every class.
Is that true?
Yes. And every class we would talk about Tiger Woods.
As a good person?
Yes. As the exemplary person that we should as we should try to model ourselves after.
It's haunting how many wonderful black men they tear down with their lies in this country.
These whores.
The whores is fine. The whores is fine. It's just S, F, and C.
Okay, got it.
We bleep out the swears so that children can listen. And I don't mind children hearing whores. I think that's fine. Some of our whore listeners might have a problem with it, but I, you know, I, God bless them and God help them.
Right.
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
O.J. Simpson, the great black man torn down by America. Cosby.
Yes.
Kanye at the moment. Poor sweet Kanye. Michael. Jackson.
Mike Tyson.
Yes. And all he did was rape. It's all he did to be brought down. Rape and bite. Great man. Otherwise, what a fighter. Love him. Would love to have him on the show.
Yes.
Have I come in with a weird energy?
No.
Who else? Willing Heart. I think this is the key to a great podcast episode. Willing Heart.
I may be a little behind here, but what is a willing heart? What is a willing heart?
A heart that wills, I guess. I mean, I don't think they're talking about someone who's got a heart clogged up with cholesterol that's beating despite itself. I think they mean someone with a yearning soul to break out of. We were talking earlier in in a bar and just after the gig, and I was saying, a life of mediocrity. But that seems quite hard. You know, you can't just set out to have an okay career. You have to set out to be great and settle for the mediocrity you get. But it's very hard to shoot for the middle. If you shoot for the middle, you'll fall at the bottom, I believe. You know what I'm saying? So to have a really vaulting ambition, willing heart, ability to suffer, all the things that you don't want to do. Austin in the summer, takes a willing heart to get through heart. That.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a willing heart is like heartless. Like you kind of have to be
like
heartless
this,
to have a willing
like
heart.
Like this a lot. Dig.
Yes. Well, you have to cut throat. You have to leave people behind. There's a dark side to the willing heart. Because I think you guys are thinking positive.
Yes.
Like I have ambition.
I'm really trying
passion,
to think positive.
I have dreams. But I think a lot of people are just...
Don't you find that
sad? I have a willing heart.
I find that really sad. And I find that it catches up with people eventually.
Right. I leave my family behind. I divorce my wife. I don't see my kids.
Oh,
because I have
get
a willing
me wrong.
Heart.
Immigrants are terrible people, you know, because they've left their communities. I said it's as an immigrant. And it's you do a violence to people you know and love and the role you have in their lives by going to a new place for your own personal financial thing. No, I think, look, there must be a way, and I believe there is a way to will with the heart and not cause chaos and damage. But that's the lesson we take from American capitalism, as best I understand it, is, you know, you go and do your bad thing over there, your venture capital, your Walmart, your whatever. And then you take the profits and it's like, I'll build a nice little garden, little gated thing over here. I'm going to turn the bad thing I do into a small good thing. But the bad you do is so much vaster than the private good that you get. I think we must order ourselves such that our willing heart improves everything around us.
And that would be the impossible, turning such a bad atrocity into a beautiful little garden. The impossible.
Well, that may be the wisdom that P.F. Chang's is bringing us. And we'll get to achieving the impossible again. But I'm really intrigued that you've brought this up, of the that your ambition is bad for the people around you.
I mean, yeah. Everybody's got skeletons in their closet. That's why all the men though that we listed that were torn down by whores, they had ambition.
Well, I don't think later on, O.J. Simpson decapitating that woman is quite in that ballpark. And some of those people needed to go down, and some of them potentially good people,
mm-hmm.
unfairly turned on by a business. No, I have to think that we can do great things. And have it be good for everybody, you know, and mm-hmm. not hurt people along the way. I struggle because I'm definitely hurting people by being in America.
How so?
Well, my family has to be here. This is a great country in so many ways, mm-hmm. but it's hard to go to a new place and drag people there. Mm-hmm. I have friends and family that I've left behind who miss me very much and write to me, and the time difference, and I actually don't want to talk to some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, over the phone, what can you really do to build? I mean, you can... Who... I mean, someone who makes a... What are we doing with it? How important is our free time for other people? That's an important question.
How important is our free time?
You know, you give yourself to work. You say, I'm working 12-hour days, and then mm-hmm. you're not having time for community and love and compassion, your children, your wife, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to work hard and have an ordered family life? If so, how?
I don't know if it's possible.
I don't think it's possible.
Yeah.
No, it is.
There are very few examples of people doing it well publicly.
Who was it? Someone who did it well?
My goodness.
Trump.
Some of those marriages didn't last, but it feels like he genuinely, on Trump, loves his children, seems mm-hmm. to be there for his children. Mm-hmm. Children have turned out okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least they love him. They have dignified, strange lives.
Right.
But they're not, you know, drug addicts or... things of that nature. Yeah. So that's good.
They haven't killed any hookers.
That we know of yet.
And that's a big one.
But Hunter didn't kill a prostitute, did he?
I don't think so.
He's just having too good a time.
I think some of the Kennedys killed hookers, right? One of the Kennedys killed a hooker.
I don't think she was a hooker. I think you're thinking of Ted in the automobile.
Was it his wife?
No, she was just a lady at a party.
Okay.
And then he didn't kill her.
But what is a lady at such a celebrity
party? I want to just clarify before... I think there's good people at all these parties as well. He crashed his car and then I think swam to safety and not until the morning let people know that it happened.
Right, that's what
happened. She drowned. Now, what are you looking up? Share.
Well, I'm looking up because I think it's interesting when you're saying balancing a family versus doing your work and being there for community. And a lot of studies say that the happiness index caps out around $500,000, $500,000 a year.
I'd heard $80,000 a year, but $500,000.
Yeah, it starts there. It starts at $80,000. That's the bare one. Yeah. So I think if you're working between $80,000 and $500,000 a year, I think you're in a good place where you can both accomplish what you want and be there for your community.
Mm-hmm. You think, you know, Catholic social teaching talks about earning what is relevant to your station. That, you know, you have three children. Well, you need to go out and earn enough money for three children. You don't have to earn more money than that, and that's the money you should give away.
So break even.
You should basically be breaking even. You should have enough for your own provisions and so people won't suffer that you're a bad steward, but you really shouldn't try and have more money than that. But the Protestant thing is like, show how much God loves you by having heaps of scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's this country really goes all in on that. It's good to be rich here.
Well,
it's better to be rich. I've seen the poor.
Where do you stand morally on, you know, objectivism versus collectivism?
I was an objectivist for years.
Really?
I was a big Ayn Randian guy. Through university, it felt like without having to believe in God, the most strange and provocative thing you could get into. You could be a Nietzschean and people just go, interesting, deep, strange. Ah, context. You say, I love Ayn Rand and people look at you like you're a massive... spastic.
And were you?
Oh, yeah. I was wrong. But I love Ayn Rand. Did you ever read Ayn Rand?
I read The Fountainhead.
It's a gripping read.
Yes.
There's nothing I want to do more than blow up public housing and make a speech so that everybody agrees that that was the right thing to do.
It was.
And also, there is the rape is, you know, but she's obviously very keen.
There's a rape.
Complicated.
It's a more... It's a very hot
Right.
But he rapes her, and that's not good. Mm. Yeah. It's one of the many problems with objectivism is that there's room in it for a hot rape.
But right. But not like a random stranger.
No, it's a woman that he's been spending some time with. And
who's attracted to him.
Oh, okay. She's very keen, but, you know.
He made his move. He pulled the trigger too soon.
And so
he saw what he wanted.
She wanted him to do
the
that.
Other thing. She was unable to say. It's, man, what a great book. It is. It must be said. I read, I think it was Anthem, her first book.
Oh, okay.
First, which is very sort of 1984-y.
Okay.
But from an objectivist point of view. And I enjoyed that a great deal. And then I read, Atlas Shrugged. And here's a weird.
Read all of Atlas Shrugged.
I got through all of, ripped through Atlas Shrugged.
Wow.
But I was going through this weird time in my life where I was, 21, 22 at university. And I was just really getting off on reading big books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my, comedy wasn't going well. I just started. I was doing an arts degree. I was getting some money from the government to study. Not a lot, but, you know, I was living with my parents or living in meager share house arrangements. And so there was a lot of time, and I'd quit video games. So I read War and Peace, Anna Karenina, Infinite Jest. And so after those, boy, Atlas Shrugged is an absolute romp.
Really?
Oh, you ripped through it.
Wow.
And it's very strange. Okay, her philosophy, I don't know how across Ayn Rand you are.
None whatsoever.
Her whole thing, sort of a perversion of Aristotelian ethics, that objectivism, the world is objective, things are as they are, A equals A is a big thing for her. So, like, don't get caught up in, you know, simulacra and your own nonsense. Just like, you know, what you want is good. Go and get what you want.
Uh-huh.
And you can know who you are, and you are governed by reason. All these things that I
finding purpose through your work.
That's is a hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
But also that your work should be just and meaningful in some way, that there are some forms of work that are despicable, but like that you're sort of, this is the mystic component, that you're born to do something. And all the good characters in her books are really born to be he's born to be an architect.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm loud, is that annoying?
No.
Great. He's born to be an architect, and he's going to be a certain kind of architect, and other people who are born to be architects who aren't being an architect in the right way, they're scum, and they are goo people who are being torn down.
But they've abandoned themselves. They've abandoned their own path.
They didn't have
beautiful.
They didn't have a willing heart.
I love that you've got that. I don't usually have that.
That one wasn't the clap one.
What did you push?
I horn, a bell, cricket, and...
Where's the da-dum-tsh?
That's the record scratch.
This is the record scratch?
Yeah, this is the record scratch.
All right, that'll be necessary for what I'm about to say.
Yes.
Here's the big problem with Ayn Rand's philosophy. Is that there are some things that we have to do. Did that work? Was that funny? Great. So in Atlas Shrugged, and this is spoiling it, so skip ahead. Where's the da-dum-tsh?
Blue, dark blue.
Da-dum-tsh and record. What is that one?
It's like a fairy wand.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, I know. You don't indulge.
We don't. Grab it. Dump it.
Hold on.
Yeah.
It's because it's going to escape me and I'm not going to get it right. The plot of Atlas Shrugged is great people are disappearing. The world is held a lot by all these... who's the guy in the Fountainhead? Who's the main guy?
Rourke.
Rourke. He wants to be an architect.
Howard Rourke.
It's a different kind of society, a little bit in Atlas Shrugged, where it's held aloft by like these 100... America survives because there's like 100 great people who are true to themselves. And whereas in the Fountainhead, they're true to themselves about sort of boring things. Exciting things like architecture or journalism. Here, it's like she runs trains, you know. And there's another guy who's like, I love making the steel for the train tracks. That's my thing, is making steel. And another guy's like, my big thing, you know, it's just like pedantic, just like industrial types. The man who makes coal, the man who makes weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And they start disappearing. And then the economy starts to fall apart. And she goes to a magical land hidden in the mountains with the man whose job in his life is to be a pilot. And she goes to this community, and it's all the people who have abandoned America because America wasn't treating them right, and they've walked away. They're men going their own way and women going their own way, and they're all here in this little kingdom, and they're just waiting for America to have all the mediocrities and people who lie to themselves collapse and crumble. And, you know, there's the man who loves making ice cream. They have the perfect society because everyone's being true to themselves. It's heaven. And then one of the people there is the mother. And she's a very good, she's a perfect mother to her two children. And you go, hold on, that's not all right. You can't have a society of 100 people and one of them, only one of them should be a mother. And because that's what she was born to do, is be a mum. This is nonsense. Everybody, women need to be mothers. Men need to be, for the race, for the human race.
To make the pilots and the steel men. And
my
the,
God, I mean, what if one in a million people is a good educator? Just no one will go to school? This is how she's very different. I mean, capitalism would say it's your own material self-interest and you don't want to go and work at the beer shop, but we need beer, and so you can have 10 silver coins spending a time you didn't want to spend there at the beer manufacturing establishment. But she goes, everyone, if you follow, if you have a willing heart and you achieve what would seem impossible to other people but is only possible for you, then you'll be happy and the world will be happy and everybody should live like this. And all virtue is subservient to your desire. And
the virtue of selfishness.
It's the, yes, she goes on and on about the virtue of selfishness. It's a very virtuous rape. In the
but family. Selfishness, she interprets as different than most people interpret selfishness.
Yes. Well, she has a lofty idea of the self. She has she doesn't really believe in human nature being harmed or fallen in some way. I think this is a... I mean, people can be harmed and fallen and do the wrong thing, but it's because they have the wrong ideas or they're somehow weak. But, like, if you really know who you are and you really go about doing it, it's... And this is very compelling when you're a teenager. Because you think, I am the great man.
It was compelling to me 8 months ago.
Yeah.
Still is. I mean, also, I have nothing against
Fountainhead, right?
Fountainhead.
Yeah, it's all I talked about.
It's great. I started reading it again recently.
I should read it.
I gave it to a friend, and so I didn't get to keep reading it. It's great.
So what was kind of the point of the woman who was the mother? Is that every woman should
it's
be a mother?
I think she's making the point that even even things that are less extravagant than discovering a new way to make a metal, you know, something as ordinary as being a mother.
Okay.
That should just be done by someone who's called to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that this isn't, you know, someone like, he loves scrubbing toilets.
Right.
The way he scrubs those toilets. Right. He should only be a toilet scrubber and he's going to find new exciting ways of scrubbing.
And he will aspire to be the best he can at it.
The best he can. And it doesn't matter if he's the best in the world. He probably will be because with this attitude.
Because he's following himself.
He's following himself. Mm-hmm. But that you've got to become the best person you can be. And it is electric, except that I don't think it maps well onto life.
Right.
We should have ambition, and we do live in. I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot. It's my podcast, but still, yeah. I would like to get your input on it as well. It's late. I've had this coffee. That was a mistake. But is this why you said you wanted to be a guy? You're gripped by Rand fever.
No.
No, you should. It's exciting.
I had a therapist who told me years ago that I should read The Virtue of Selflessness because she would listen to my problems and she thought that it would help me.
She thought you were too selfless?
Yes.
It's nuts. I didn't know these therapists existed. Only in America.
Yeah. She was very... I liked her a lot. She was one of the ones I was closest with. And at the time, The Virtue of Selflessness was too dense for me. So
yeah.
Then I thought, well, maybe I can read her fiction, and The Fountainhead was a lot more manageable for me to understand.
Yeah. Have you watched her on YouTube?
Yes.
Yeah. She is so erotic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like horny? Like she's just...
There is... attractive? No. I mean, most of these videos, she's like 60s. Mm. She's got a crooked nose and funny skin and a really strange haircut. That I sometimes look like I have when I have a short haircut and grow it back. It looks a little Ayn Randy. But it is just like the energy in this woman. The way she talks, it's like she's a Russian emigre. Mm. She goes on, she's having an interview with a guy. You know, it's like a news presenter. And he's like, you were asking me in a break if people liked me more or less because of my success. And I think they like me less. It's a bizarre thing to come back from an ad break and have the guy doing. She's like, yes, people hate you and they want to bring you down because they're jealous. You should never be jealous.
Because of Peter Keating's.
They are. Isn't he a disturbing character?
Yeah.
What was your? I've got my favorite bit of the Fountainhead. What was your favorite bit of the Fountainhead?
My favorite bit of the Fountainhead. Oh, when gosh. Oh wait, no, you start from. So I can think about it.
The Peter Keating's love interest, who is I think the niece.
Devastating.
Of that man. When she snaps and she realizes there's something wrong with her uncle, and she doesn't. She's not articulate enough to know what it is, and she just breaks at him and goes, "There's something. Get away from me." I feel like that every day.
Yeah.
That there's something huge and wrong about something. Every airport that I'm in, I feel like that woman just snapping and going, I can't put my finger on it, but get it away from me. This is evil. This amorphous collectivist goo.
Just any Haitian that comes around you.
Can't get enough Haitians.
Doesn't it feel like...
Love really? The Haitians. Love
interesting.
I feel that way at the movies. I feel like whenever I see movies, I go, is there a force out there trying to... And the arts.
Yeah.
Destroy every art and every good thing.
This is so beautiful that you've said this. This is a paranoia that only I...
No, I also share that paranoia.
My dad had it in a big way. And still does. But he would like, you know, just... We'd be watching a movie as a family. He'd get up and he'd walk out halfway through it. And he would say, you know, it was something like it's left wing, he would often say. But what he meant... this is no longer art. This has become propaganda in some way, and it's haunting when that happens. When you see a bad movie, it wrecks me for ages. Wonder Woman 2 had to walk out halfway. I thought Wonder Woman 1 was actually really great, but Wonder Woman 2,
great personification of that idea is the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, where the critic score is much much higher than the audience score.
Yes.
But also you can't trust the audience always completely.
Sure.
But you'll notice like those Oscar-based ones where it's just like some terrible movies and you'll see all the reviews are blaringly positive, and then that makes
audience
me think...
Audience score is through the floor.
Who owns these publications and why do they want to destroy art?
I got some theories.
Like when Ellsworth Tui is propping up this terrible playwright, and
what does it benefit him to have a bad playwright out?
That's what I'm confused about. Is the why? Because he goes on these monologues of like, the most powerful thing you can do is collect souls. He talks about collecting souls,
and we know people like that.
Yes,
who sometimes they have them in a big way, and it's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you ever meet somebody who just wants to control everybody in the group around them, and people have to leave the group if they can't be under control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's haunting.
Mm-hmm.
And she identifies that with the religious impulse that he wanted to be, I think, a priest of some kind, Ellsworth Tui, when he was a boy. If I'm remembering this correctly.
Yes. He was in, I think, yes, he wanted to be a priest, and then he was in Princeton or something or the other.
And she would, you know, Christianity to her is sort of like a slave religion. You have the pagan, the great strong pagan religions.
Because it denies the self.
Yeah. Which I think is a very perverse reading of Catholicism. That's the point. I was there with her briefly at the time. I sort of thought, this Christianity seems nice. But, like, it helped that we weren't living in a Christian society. I imagine in the 30s, when she's writing, or the 40s, when everyone is conservative and this thing is happening, you'd go, I'll put those two together. It's probably the same force. But now whatever that force is not
the same
religious. No. Well, that I think that energy of going like someone wants ugliness to succeed in the world.
That lives on.
That lives on. But the Christians are just not in power in America in any meaningful way.
You don't think so?
No. The last time Christians were in power in America was like when Al Gore was coming out and insisting that expletives be put, Tipper Gore going like, let's clear up the smut and this sort of thing. No one's doing that now. Tipper Gore's probably getting together with Sexy Red talking about clapping that thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tipper Gore's still alive.
It'd be a great podcast.
Clap that thing?
Yeah.
Tip! Never tell you. That was my
sexy red impression.
Yes. Chip. Who's that guy who says Chip?
Chip the Ripper.
Oh, we've discussed Chip the Ripper before. Hold on. I don't want to get lost. Hold on. Hold on.
You guys are talking about so many things that I don't know. Well, like, you guys went on a whole fountainhead.
There's something when I watch the films of Christopher Nolan that it makes me very happy and content. Like, I feel like I'm in a safe pair of hands, and he's getting me through the end, and he really wants to make a great thing, you know? And I might not always agree with the point he's making or even understand it, but I don't at any point resent. I think he's trying to make art. There are many examples where this is not true of people, but I just like I rewatched the Dark Knight on a plane recently, and it's like I think I've watched this film 15 times now. He's not doing any of this because, like, he doesn't have to manipulate you, or he's made it, and he doesn't betray you.
He
made a movie about Batman, and he's not pandering. You know, he's made a weird, complicated movie that has some like problems in storytelling because of how much he's putting in there, but he felt compelled to take something that is art that he didn't have words for and to distill it down into this picture to try and have a big audience. He still wants there to be explosions and exciting things, but it's not like, you know, Michael Bay. You watch a Michael Bay movie and you go, do you hate me? Sometimes I think, you know.
And alternatively, Christopher Nolan could have made it that story not bad, Batman, and made it pretentious and not accessible.
Yes, that he thought there was a good... Yeah, and that's sometimes his movies veer into that sort of territory.
Right.
Like when he has Bane indecipherable on purpose to be like, oh, sometimes we can't hear what evil is saying. You go, I can't hear what he's saying.
Yeah, I need to know.
So I think that film doesn't stand up as well.
It was a hard act to follow.
Quentin Tarantino. I mean, these people, I think this is why we trust certain directors. Is because you go, oh, he's really making art.
Yeah. I feel this way about it's like a nothing movie. It's Call Me By Your Name with Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer.
I didn't see it.
Do you know who made it?
Yes.
I've heard a lot about it.
Luca Day something, whatever.
It's just straight through. There's most of the movie is like no sound or anything.
Yeah.
Or it is just sound. It's no dialogue. It's like Timothée Chalamet walking around a house throwing a peach up.
And then they're doing gay stuff?
And then they're doing gay stuff. But it's like a beautiful love story over 2 hours and 30 minutes. All right. But it's so like there's probably like 16 lines realistically when you break it down. But there's no...
I like that.
Yeah, there's no trickery. There's no hidden message. It's just a gay love story in Italy.
It's in Italy. All right. Well, that's interesting because really there was an Italian film movement where they were doing a lot of that. It's not New Wave, but like The Bicycle Thieves. Have you seen that?
Yes.
It's just a lot of walking around and looking at stuff. Well, you know, there'll be a scene where a lady is lighting a stove. And she's like walks over the stove, she's got her matches, and the first one doesn't go, and the second one doesn't go, and the third one doesn't go, and the fourth one goes, and then she turns it on. And it just takes as long as it's going to take. You know, we're not having any razzle-dazzle for you. You're going to watch this woman.
Yeah.
This is what I'm hoping. I think I get to make a movie in July, and the script isn't quite long enough, so I'm hoping to use some of these techniques to get that to a feature film length.
But I love things like that.
Yeah.
It's a comedy.
It's just fucking...
It can
time.
Be great, and I appreciate the fucking. And we all have a brief reprieve at the 38-minute mark to swear, and I'll just edit the swears
did
out.
You did incredibly well.
You did, yes, yeah, but you did a great job.
I lasted so long.
It felt necessary and urgent. Sometimes I understand that can be boring. You do risk being pretentious and boring.
Yes, I like replacing them. You know,
I'm not saying with the swear words being pretentious. I'm saying cinema that takes a long time to get where it's going.
Yes.
But other times it's riveting. But I remember the first time I saw Stalker. It's a Tarkovsky, but first and only time. Great movie, very slow. During the opening credit sequence, which goes for like 10 minutes, I was like, what are we doing? And then it was great. But I tried watching another one of his movies and I just couldn't do it because I don't have time. I understand the need to be gripping and flashy, but are you an Ingmar Bergman person?
I have no
very
idea.
Very slow. Seventh season.
Well, I think I like just like making boring captivating.
Yeah.
You know, suspenseful in a way.
Do you find this in music as well? Does this...
Like maybe.
Philip Glass, I hated when I was...
Who's Philip Glass?
He's a minimalist composer. He's probably the most famous living American composer. of classical music, and it's all minimalism. So when he came in, it was all atonalism and people doing like short. Doesn't always sound as Chinese as that. But Philip Glass, it's all like. But it'll go for hours. But it's a very small changes.
Right.
He's influenced almost a lot of film scores by Philip Glass. Truman Show, Philip Glass. Other examples too, I'm sure.
It's a good enough one.
Yeah. But it's. But I want. Because like. I feel better if I've been driving around listening to the classical music station and like trying and giving myself to it. And it's like, it doesn't have that boom, ta boom, ta boom, ta boom, that, you know,
right.
throbbing Hispanic rhythm that you hear very loud everywhere in America.
Like, there's something about listening to classical music in the car. I will just listen to it and think.
But it's
going along.
It is an effort, you know? Sometimes I don't have the energy and I just pop on garbage.
Yeah.
Loud music.
Just a girl singing about her privates.
I did enjoy
Rico Nasty Smack
a Bitch, which is actually about not having to smack a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God I didn't have to today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, I,
what a blessing to realize maybe I didn't need violence. I'm so glad I didn't need violence.
Isn't it sad that she feels called to violence every day?
Yeah,
that it's a strange day to and be thankful for when she doesn't
the
have
relief,
to smack a bitch.
The relief of that,
yeah.
Is painful in itself.
We're giving her more credit here than I have.
Yeah, the song's really holding a mirror to society, really showing how bad things can get out there.
I mean, it is right. This is the problem with doing this Vice magazine style.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Glorifying the bass and denigrating the glorious. But, yeah, you do listen to a song like Smack a Bitch, and you can't help but think, what a prison this woman is in, that she has to smack a bitch all the time, and the brief moment she doesn't have to smack a bitch is good for her.
Yeah.
You know, she's trapped in a very rage. You know, she doesn't like it. I always think about the Pusha T when he says, 24/7, 365, pussy stays on my mind. And I think, that's sad. You know, he's not saying that as like a huzzah. Yeah. I think about pussy always. So it stays. Mm-hmm. It weighs on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm cheating on my bitch and she has to get used to it because I'm not changing and I'm going to give her money. I mean, he's not, this is not
it's
like
devastating.
He's not saying be this way. This is great. Yeah. He's saying I am a douchebag, an asshole. Yeah.
He's screaming for help.
It's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Many examples, many such cases.
And lots of cuss words, I'll say.
Look, I love cuss words. I'd cuss. It's just for the pod.
Just
for the pod. The children can hear.
Yes. Yeah. These are lessons.
What got you from a therapist years ago telling you to read some Ayn Rand to actually starting it up recently?
I would try over and over to read The Virtue of Selfishness, and then I felt in a place where I was starting to do more self-care things for myself.
Okay.
And I just picked it up and was fascinated by it. There's this bookshop out in Bastrop. And by this author, I like Ryan Holiday. He does a lot of self-help stuff or stoicism. He writes about stoicism a lot. And he's got a bookshop in Bastrop. And it's a curated bookshop, so it's a smaller collection.
Okay, that's fun.
Yeah, and I kept on seeing
it. How far is that from where we are in?
About 30 minutes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's a really fun day if you ever want to do a day.
I would love to.
There's a park next to it, and we go to the Buc-ee's there all the time. All the time. We take trips nearly every week. Sometimes we go to Buc-ee's and we'll get a hotel. Mm-hmm. Patrick, myself, therapy. and Patrick's girlfriend, Heather. Very funny comic as well.
Mm-hmm. You get a hotel and go and visit the Buc-ee's?
Yeah, and we'll eat snacks.
This is lovely.
And we'll eat snacks and watch cable television.
Does sound sleep. Like a dream.
It's kind of nostalgic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning, we go to the diner. And then right across from the diner is my favorite bookstore. And if we're really feeling it, if it's really in the mood, there's a wonderful, beautiful park walk right after.
Lovely.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Have you been to San Antonio?
Yes, I was born there.
Oh, of course. Excuse me. I apologize. And you've been on the walk since? The River Walk?
Yes, I was.
No, I haven't done it yet. I've just heard that it's incredible.
It's getting a lot nicer.
No, I went on the walk a month ago.
Yeah, with Patrick hated it.
Yes, I brought my younger siblings there. I flew them down for a week, and I thought, what can we do? There's not much to do in Austin, is what I realized, other than drinking. And they're young, so...
Tell me about it.
I had nothing to do with
them.
I've
got kids. I'm trying to take them out to see you. We got an art gallery, got a science museum. What next? Mm-hmm.
Come on. We went to the arcade three nights in a row.
You have to.
I was just like, I don't know what else to do for you guys. I'll get you burgers, and we'll go to the arcade.
San Antonio, did you go up to the tower?
No, we did not. They were too scared to do it.
I understand.
But I wanted to do that. But then we did the river walk, and it was horrible. It was green and mucky.
Oh.
And so many just fat, sweating, smelly people.
I'm going to do it on the boat. I'm going to get on the boat.
That was a funny thing. One of the guys on the boat, they drove by me. They drove by us, and they pointed out an ice cream shop. And the guy goes, that ice cream shop, all you need to know about that is they have $1,000 ice cream. So, yeah, if you want to spend your time there, go for it. But I don't indulge in anything like that.
But I don't indulge in anything of that nature.
And everybody on the boat was kind of just like, ah, okay. Anyway, James. By the way, I'm paid by the river, not paid by these businesses, so I can say what I want.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
James, Patrick and I were discussing this a few nights ago, if I'm remembering correctly. What do you think about, is self-improvement ever annoying?
Yeah. What? Well, is it annoying to do or for other people to witness?
Both.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, it's annoying to do, but like, is self-improvement ever taken too far?
I don't know about too far, but I think in the wrong direction, sure. I think self-improvement is about becoming more virtuous, as best I understand it, within the Stoic tradition, that there are real virtues. You can become more prudent. You can become more fortitudinous. You can all these good things. That Aristotle would outline and that the Gospels would add faith, hope, and charity. But you can, if you practice them, you get better at them. And what was weird to discover was that it's actually beautiful. When you meet someone who's really, really brave or really kind or has a willing heart in a certain way, it actually does make you feel really nice to be in that person's company. But that's not the self-improvement that I think most people are...
I'm talking about modern day.
Yeah, it's beastly. Mm. Often.
Beastly? In what way?
You're turned into a human beast.
Right.
I mean, things about like... I'm trying to think of examples where I don't have to name specific people and be unpleasant about it.
Give them a fake name.
No, it's too difficult.
Bob Oakland. I think that's a real person, but... It's the fake name I came up with.
Bob Oakland. Robert Oakland. Rob Oak.
Robert Everett Oakland.
It's like, what do they teach you in self-help? Right? Like, what are they telling you are the things
you should be working on? Well, this is my problem with self-help is of all the self-help that I've read, a lot of it has opposing advice. Everything contradicts itself if you read enough self-help.
Yeah.
There are people that say you should be... doubling your work, you should be working 80 hours a week, and then there are books that say 4-hour work week. Yeah. So that's a 76-hour difference. You know, so I guess it's what you identify with, but I don't think anyone has the answers.
Well, there's a schizophrenic
quality to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what are you saying? I cut you off.
Well, no. I mean, you have a bunch of people who have a different idea of what human nature is. And what human flourishing would look like. So if you have someone who really values leisure, they would say you want to minimize your work and spend your time in leisure. And if you have someone who has a different view that like making a lot of money is really good, then you've got to do this. I mean, I like it as a theory, and I thought about doing it before AI came. And I used to be a copywriter, a digital copywriter, and I was really fast. Like whatever gifts God gave me for stand-up comedy, he gave me real gifts.
For copy.
For churning out 3,000 words. It's 8, is it? No, yes. I'm going to go with one of my 4s in my pocket. He gave me an incredible gift for writing acceptable copy really, really fast without using the... The computer started getting better at magnifying people's work, but I was like, I could get all my work done in a day and be on the same level as everybody else in the company who I saw like tapping away, and it's like... I could you know, I could start a podcast about a boat, or I can do my comedy, or I just spend time with my family and go for walks. But I was tempted to think, what if I just work a normal week? I could work five jobs like this. This is a $60,000 a year position. I'd be on $300,000 and I'd just be working a normal amount for a normal person. And I just could never be asked to do it. But I like this thing that young programmers do it, of like just taking on, if you have like a weird ADHD brain and you can get yourself into a fixation, just work really hard for 5 years doing a heap of jobs and bank $5 million and then live off the interest or something, which I would be interesting. But I mean, who really knows what human nature is? Who knows, like, the end? If you're trying to help yourself where? Help yourself, like, what does a happy person look like? And that's why one of the reasons I became a Catholic is I saw these young families when I would go to Mass and I would go, oh, there's like a brightness and a reasonableness to these people. I'd been going to like the mega churches as a joke, sort of. I'd be on the road and it would be Sunday. And I'm like, let's go see what's happening on Sunday morning. And I remember going to a mega church and other sorts of Protestant things and just being like overwhelmed by how dumb people looked. Like just they, in their eyes, they looked stupid. And it's like, I hate it. I was like, it was a very Ellsworth Toohey type thing where I was going, there's something wrong here. What's wrong? And then I went to the Catholic thing. It's young families, a lot of people smoking, a lot of people look tired, a lot of checked shirts and ladies in dresses, just like getting it together for one day to get through it. But there was like a vitality. It's like they know something I don't. They're going in a direction that I haven't been, and I want a piece of that, and I want it for me. And so I'm going to take it. And I told that to the priest. He said, why do you want to become Catholic?
And what did he
say? I like what these families... Well, I used nicer language. And he says, you want what they have. You want to take what they have and have it for yourself. And I said, yeah. And he went, that's not a bad place to start. And we just... He's a great priest. I love him very much.
He said, that's a willing heart.
It's genuinely, you've observed a good and you've gone, can I have that? And frequently, I find the picture that the church has of human nature doesn't add up with what I want. You know? Like...
But what do you want? The catamaran?
Oh, sometimes a big fat ass. You know, whatever.
Right.
Or
But isn't that kind of included? Like the desire for those things?
Yeah.
But the human nature of wanting things that maybe aren't serving others and you?
Well, this is where the church's view of what the soul is so different to Ayn Rand, where she sort of goes, if you really like know your heart, you go and get it. And the church would say, there's original sin and you're not always going to be the best judge of what your heart really wants, because you've got you may have a willing heart, but there's a wound on it and you have concupiscence and it feels good to make other people feel bad, not to get anything, but just to make them feel small, you know? I do. all the time. Too much. I'm trying to be better at that. Yes, it's wonderful to be wrathful. It's wonderful to take something from somebody else. I mean, these are really, makes you feel like a big man. There's a bit in Norm's book where he's talking about prison rape and they're trying to explain, have you read Norm's book? Oh, it's so good. And the guy's like, rape's not about sex, it's about power. And Norm goes, like when I scatter change over a bridge so that the homeless people have to run and try and get money and dodge the cars. That's what rape is. Very rape-heavy podcast. Apologize to all the victims. And perpetrators who don't want to think about the terrible things that they've done in the past. I don't think we're good judges of knowing what is going to make us happy and what is beautiful. If it's true about Christianity, is they go, well, God became man and you live like that and you're never going to figure out how to do that on your own. And that's like just a gift from beyond, that reason can help you figure out how to do that, but it's never going to show you what that is. And this is revelation and that's given. Now, if it's not true, that's crazy. And you're chasing after something that's not based in reality at all. But if it's true, then you've been given the gift of really knowing what human nature is. And that's the only way from knowing sort of what the first thing is that you should be after. That's why everything else is schizophrenic, because you don't know. They all have a different idea of who you're meant to be. But if you have a real idea, solid personal idea of who you're meant to be, then someone chasing that and trying to help themselves be that, I love it. It's great. It's so nice to watch someone really better themselves. But then some, you know, if you want to be healthy, that's great. If you want to be super muscular and hot, it's gross. Mm-hmm. Both of them might end up looking the same and they might be doing the same activities, but there's a, you can pick up a vibe that hurts you. Is that, I'm sorry for rambling, but that is how I feel about it.
No, that's fascinating to hear your perspective on that. I've never asked you these sorts of questions, or we've never had this sort of deep of a discussion.
It's hard after a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm certainly not there after a show. I'm just thinking, fuck! Yeah. We can all have one more swear.